So the big question is this: how do investors like us get access to the ideas, information, and most importantly, the right people that give us the tools and information we need to make informed and educated decisions to have success? That is the question, and this podcast will give us the answers. This is Mark Moss, your host. Let's get this started. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Market Disruptors Podcast. Today, we are going to go over some of the big news that's been happening over the last couple of weeks, and I'm going to answer a question that I've been getting a lot. One of those has to do with a lot of the regulations and a lot of the talk that's been coming out of the top government officials over the last couple of weeks. And just to recap a little bit, I mean, we've gone in the last 10 years from having no such thing as cryptocurrencies to having Bitcoin in this, you know, magical internet money, to then, you know, being a joke, being laughed at, to then being called names, rat poison, fraud, scams, things like that, to now having governments afraid, right? We have multiple countries are still thinking about banning it and regulating it. We have the president of the United States now tweeting about Bitcoin. We have the secretary of the treasury talking about Bitcoin, and it's come so far. We had the secretary of the treasury, Mnuchin, he's talking about Bitcoin, and you know, they really want to run this narrative of it only being used for illicit activities, which we know is false. If you don't know, it is false. Bitcoin is an open ledger. That means all the transactions are open for everyone to see. Now, it is somewhat anonymous. However, for the most part, with modern technology that we have today with chain analysis and so forth, you can trace those transactions back to find out who they belong to. So it's not really private. And that's how people get busted, like Ross Ulbricht from Silk Road, who's serving double life sentences for building a website. But that's a whole nother topic. But we have, you know, we have this narrative that they're trying to push that it's only used for illicit activities, and all it does is help, you know, terrorists and drug dealers and things like that. And it was interesting that he pushes that narrative, even though most of it's false. And he was on with Joe Squawk from CNBC, and he said, well, as far as I know, the dollar is the most used for that. And Mnuchin went on to say that, no, it's not. The dollar's never been used for any illicit activity, which is just absolutely ridiculous. We see billions and even probably trillions of dollars of fines that the banks have paid for laundering money. We know that dollars are still the main currency of choice for any type of drug dealing or anything like that. So for him to come out and say so matter-of-factly, it's just blatant lies, right? It's not even misinformation. It's just blatant lies. And it just kind of shows their true motives, right? At the end of the day, it's about protecting the U.S. dollar. And so we know that the U.S. dollar is weak. I'm actually doing a two-part video series on YouTube right now talking about the history of how the U.S. dollar became the world reserve currency and how it's failing right now, right before our eyes. If you understand the transition from the past when it took over from Britain, when the U.S. took over from Britain, and you understand how that process didn't happen overnight, but over 20, 30 years, and you understand the process that happened, it actually sheds light onto what we're seeing right now today. And I'm not going to go into all those things. If you want more, go back to the go to YouTube, search Mark Moss, and watch those two videos. However, you know, we know that the U.S. dollar is falling in its reserve currency status. It's being challenged. It's been challenged by China, Russia, and Iran since 2015 with the oil. But now this year, it's really turned up with the EU starting their INSTEX program, which is basically a SWIFT system. Now, the SWIFT system is how the U.S. moves money and the world moves money through the U.S. financial system. And now with the EU, our allies, Germany, France, et cetera, now partnering up with our enemies, Russia, China, Iran, the U.S. is finding itself on the outside. You know, you kick enough people out of the party and eventually you're the only one there. And that's kind of what we're seeing. And so, you know, the U.S. dollar is really having this tough time. And that's why we see this talk from Donald Trump. That's why we see this talk from Mnuchin, et cetera. They're really trying to protect the dollar. Now, because of that, a lot of people are scared. A lot of people in the United States are scared that if they're really trying to protect the U.S. dollar, will they outlaw Bitcoin? That's the question I've been getting asked a lot. Will they outlaw it? What are the risks? Like, what can they do, right? So there's a couple things that I want to say about that. First of all, we know that Bitcoin cannot be stopped, period. That's it, right? It can't be stopped. So no one can stop it. Nobody can shut it down. Nobody can block it, prevent it. Nobody can seize it, steal it, manipulate it. It just can't be done, right? So we know that. However, what can they do? Well, they could make it illegal to own. They could definitely do that. They could say, you know, if we catch you with it, it's life in prison or something like that, or something even more drastic. So they could do something like that, but they can't stop it. Now, a couple things we'll say about making it illegal. We'll say, first of all, you know, there's lots of things that are illegal. The war on drugs is a great example, and they haven't done very good with that, right? Take marijuana, for example. It's been illegal for a long time. It's now starting to become legal, but it's been illegal for a long time. And now think about marijuana. You have to grow a plant. So you have to have land, and you have to have lights, and you have to have like all these things and room to grow this plant in the open. And then, you know, it takes people to harvest it and package it and transport it and all these things. And yet they can't stop it. They can't even keep it out of prisons, right? Think about Bitcoin. It's digital. How can they stop it? They can't even see it. Think about how much easier that would be to transfer, right? So they can make it illegal. That doesn't make it go away. It definitely doesn't make it go away globally. Maybe in the United States, it might put a damper in it. But I think if people are told they can't have it, it just shows the reason why they need it that much more. The other thing is that it's already being adopted in other countries. And so, you know, it's like the movie The Matrix, right? Take the red pill or the blue pill. If you take the red pill, you see the reality, but you can't go back. And so the world has been red pilled. The world has been red pilled. We see what Bitcoin can do. And it can't go back. It can't be unseen. And if the United States decides to shut it down, the rest of the countries will jump ahead. And I'm going to talk about what other countries are doing to jump ahead. But let's stay on this topic for just a minute. So I don't see them making it illegal. I just don't see that happening. Another reason why I don't see that happening is because of the financial system. So if you have to understand how the way the political system works, and the political system, unfortunately, is mostly bought, right? So you have big corporations lobbying the government to get their laws and regulations passed the way they want them. So lobbying is a really, really big business, and being in politics is a really big business as well, right? So you have all these people lobbying and paying these politicians to influence the direction of these laws and regulations. And who are the biggest donors? Who are the biggest lobbying? Well, it's mostly Wall Street. It's mostly financial companies. Now, I know that Bitcoin is really designed to get rid of them. However, at this point, the financial industry has really embraced Bitcoin. So we have Goldman Sachs, which I would say is at the top of the heap, top of the stack, Goldman Sachs. If you worked at Goldman Sachs, you probably work in the government. If you worked at the government, you work at Goldman Sachs. It goes back and forth. They're in cryptocurrencies, right? Even directly and indirectly, they own a company called Circle. Circle owns Poloniex, which is one of the largest crypto exchanges in the U.S. They own it, right? So we have that. We have TD Ameritrade. We have Fidelity. We have E-Trade. We have the New York Stock Exchange. We have the CFTC. All of these companies have gotten into Bitcoin products. I would say that collectively they have spent billions of dollars to get into Bitcoin products, trading desks, custody solutions, futures, et cetera, right? So these companies have spent, you know, collectively $1 billion to get into these Bitcoin products. And at the same time, they're the ones that are influencing policy in the government. I just don't see that these companies spend $1 billion into a product or an asset that's going away. I just don't see that happening. So those are a few reasons why I don't think it's going to be made illegal for U.S. citizens as much as they want to do that. What I would suspect they'll do, if anything, is they'll start to slowly clamp down on it and regulate it and just make it more and more difficult. But the problem is it's a dangerous game, because as the rest of the world jumps ahead, then we could see the U.S. falling further and further behind. So we'll see how that plays out. Now, we know some of the other countries are already jumping ahead. So we've seen headlines about Iran and Bitcoin mining in Iran. I've even seen headlines about Iran sanctioning Bitcoin mining. We've seen making headlines was Bulgaria. Bulgaria somehow got into a seizure of a bunch of Bitcoin. I think it was 200,000 seized Bitcoin that's worth about $2 billion. So Bulgaria is sitting on about $2 billion worth of Bitcoin. And to put this into perspective, Bulgaria owns a bunch of gold as well, as you might imagine, as any sovereign nation would. They own about 40 tons of gold, and it's worth about $1.7 billion. So they have Bitcoin that's worth more than gold. Imagine that. Now, they've seized this. They didn't necessarily buy it to add to their stockpile, but they have it. And it's going to be very interesting to see what they do. I think, you know, now over the next year or so, we'll start to see these countries adding Bitcoin to their strategic reserves. And at that point, the game theory kicks in, right? At that point, it's a race to see who can acquire the most. And so that's really going to influence the United States and what they're doing. And like I said, if these financial institutions jumping in aren't enough, I mean, it's already starting, right? So we have the highly anticipated BACT. We've been waiting for BACT to come online for quite some time. And BACT is with the NYSE, the New York Stock Exchange, and they've been waiting approval for a really, really long time. And supposedly they're now starting their testing, and so we're ready to get that product online. And it is going to be a physically settled, which if we have to have derivatives in the marketplace, I prefer physically settled because at least you're not trading with paper. At least it affects the supply and demand of Bitcoin because you actually have to purchase the Bitcoin to deliver it. So that's good news. We've been waiting on BACT, and I think that's really going to send the market higher. So we're going to see what happens with that. But, you know, there's other companies that have been moving faster. We have ErisX and we have LedgerX. They were able to secure CFTC approvals for these physically settled contracts. You know, we have some other ones as well. So the competition is really heating up in that space. And I think it's really going to push Bitcoin higher for the rest of the year. So that's going to be interesting to see. So we kind of have two sides of it. We have this crackdown that's coming, right? We have Trump and Mnuchin talking about it. We have, we have a little bit more crazy representatives actually saying they should ban it altogether, which I don't think is going to happen. We have, you know, the state of New York trying to go after Bitfinex. Now they're going after BitMEX, which is a derivative trading platform, because they haven't done enough to keep U.S. people off of the exchanges. So we're seeing this crackdown. But on the other side, we're seeing these financial institutions really going full steam ahead. And I think at the end of the day, they have more. They have more say. They have all the lobbying, right? And they're the ones that are really influencing the way this goes. So we're going to see. We're going to sit back. We're going to watch. We're going to report this. I'm going to continue to bring on more people in the space, attorneys that can really talk from a much higher level exactly what's going on. But it's going to be interesting either way. We're at a very transitional time. I think in the future, 50 or 100 years from now, history books will be written about this time period that we're in right now. This time period right now is very transitional. And I think history books are going to look back at this time period and go, one, what the heck were they thinking with these monetary policies? And two, wow, this is when that technology was born that really changed the world. That's where we're at right now. That's the transition that we're in right now. I'm just thankful and happy to be alive and involved in the space right now. And hopefully you are too. So that's it. That's what I got for the update for this week. Hopefully that makes sense. Hopefully that's enough to catch you up. Like I said, we'll bring on some more guests to dive in deep on this stuff. If you haven't already, please go give me some feedback, rate and review the podcast. It really, really helps out. Share it with somebody that you think needs it. And that's it. To your success. I'm out.
Hey, if you like this episode of the Market Disruptors podcast, please help us take this to the top of the podcast charts. Just please do me a favor and rate, review, and subscribe. Taking 15 seconds to just leave a quick review goes a long way in helping us reach more people and disrupt more markets. I really appreciate you listening, and I'll see you next time on the Market Disruptors podcast.